Chapter 11. Dalwin and I returned to the top of the volcano, where Malky still rested at his guard post beside the roll of Molebat Hide. The adolescent copper-scaled dragon perked up when he saw us approaching, and he stood to his feet, wagged his scaly tail like an excited puppy, and then waddled over to greet us.
"Welcome back, friends!"
The water dragon smiled.
"Did you have a good walk?"
I bit my lip to stifle my smirk. Malky might have been a large, deadly creature of the depths, but he was still just like an innocent puppy dog. He had no idea what we were really doing during our alone time, and I doubted anybody had the desire to rob him of his innocence by telling him. "It was fun," I half-lied. "Very exhausting and strenuous, but fun." Dalwin gave me a little giggle and elbowed me in the side, but I just grinned like a fool. I mean, it wasn't a total lie. It was definitely fun, even if we were both tired as a result. Oh shit. I'd forgotten she couldn't understand Malky like I could. For all Dalwin knew, he just asked us about our lovemaking. "How are things going with the rest of the group?" I asked the dragon.
"I'm not sure,"
he admitted.
"Arik went down there to check on them. The butterfly women are teaching everybody that game they were playing earlier, and Jonas keeps walking around with his burning sticks. I honestly don't know where he keeps getting them from either. It seems like every time it looks like he's about out, he finds another stick to burn."
"I don't know where he gets those sticks either, Malky," I chuckled as I turned to Dalwin. "It looks like your people's little game with the rocks is gaining traction with the rest of my crewmates. I hope that's not going to make them less productive on the ship."
"No promises,"
Dalwin shrugged.
"I will say this, though. Watch Zarandri. She may seem sweet and innocent on the outside, but she has swindled all of us at some point or another."
"Swindled you?" I chuckled. "What on earth did she swindle you out of?"
"Nuts, weapons, articles of clothing,"
the Butterfly Queen mused.
"Really anything we might have wagered. She's probably the best steal-the-stone player I've ever met."
Once we got to the edge of the volcano, I grabbed onto the rope and then slowly started to rappel down into the dark, dreary enclosure. As I lowered myself into the cavern, my nostrils were assaulted by whatever incense Jonas seemed to have an endless supply of. But I pushed on until my boots hit the rocky black ground of the ledge. Meanwhile, Dalwin gracefully fluttered down and landed next to the rest of her morpho friends.
"Ugh! How can you guys stand the smell of that stuff?"
I gagged as I pulled my shirt up over my nose.
I'm surprised the dragons haven't woken up already, just from the pure stench alone."
"It's all part of the ceremony," Jonas explained. "You have to create an environment that overloads one of the senses in some way or another. Their eyes are closed, so I can't really do anything visual. And any sort of assault on the ears would draw a lot of attention to our position. So that's out of the question. Smell is all I have."
"Oh, you can say that again." I shook my head. "I think we'll be lucky to smell anything else ever again after this is all over."
"You should play a few rounds of Steal the Stone,"
Ahuara suggested without looking up from her game.
"It really helps if you have something else to focus on. Or if you take a nap,"
Gemma added as she stretched from her spot against the wall.
"You might dream about smelling the incense, but at least it's not on your mind consciously."
"Unfortunately, the Draco Rex doesn't have time to do either," Jonas explained. "I'm just about done with this part of the ceremony, and I'll need a few helping hands for the next one."
"That's what I like to hear," I grinned at the old soothsayer. "Progress. Progress is always good. What can I do to help?" Jonas held his stick of incense out in front of his eyes and watched as the last flicker of light faded away from the burning wood. Then he tossed the charred stick off to the side, reached into his robe, and came back out with a vial of pale yellow liquid.
"The ointment," the soothsayer explained. "Now comes the part where we spread the ointment on the bonders."
"I don't see why you'd need help with that,"
Nadir scoffed.
"It's not like we're children who'll wipe off anything you ask us to put on."
"It's not just for you," Jonas warned firmly. "It's for the 8 of you, and the 8 dragons."
The room fell so silent I could hear a pin drop.
We all looked around at each other with surprised expressions and fearful eyes, but nobody seemed to want to say anything. Finally, Mira spoke up.
Did you just say we needed to put the ointment on the dragons as well?
The golden-scaled warrior gulped.
As in the large, sleeping, fire-breathing dragons down below us?
I did. The soothsayer nodded. Hence why I'm asking for a few more sets of hands.
Nosgos!
Eric called out as he shoved his index finger against the bridge of his nose. A few of the Morpho women followed suit with confused expressions, but I just rolled my eyes and sighed. I suppose I should go, I volunteered. What kind of king would I be if I made my loyal subjects do these death-defying stunts, and I didn't?
A smart one,
Dolwyn muttered under her breath. We'll need a flyer as well, Jonas suggested. One of the Morphos or Tyrion, if possible. Basically, somebody who can carry us around while possibly spreading the ointment as well. Tyrion, I ordered as I nodded at the silver dragon. I'm picking you for this one, bud.
Why me?
Tyrion gasped.
Won't I be too big to maneuver around down there?
It might be awkward, I admitted, but there's two reasons. The first is you can act like a floating platform for Jonas and me. If we stand on your back and walk around independently, we can cover more ground than if the Morphos were holding on to us.
And the other reason?
The silver dragon quirked his head to the side. if things were to absolutely go south, and one of those bad boys down below woke up? I chuckled nervously. What do you think they're going to respond to better? A bunch of neon-colored flying humanoid females, or a dragon that looks like them and is literally the child of one of their nestmates?
Point taken.
Tyrion nodded.
I can't promise the second one will make things better, though. The last time my mum saw you, weren't you trying to steal my egg?
The orcs stole your egg, I protested. We just stole it back from them. Besides, your mom knew we were good people all along. Nadir snorted.
I remember her trying to set us on fire just for sneaking into her nest.
That was the first time, I argued. Once she was running away from the orcs, she gave me a look.
A look?
Selma questioned, and the mossy-scaled dragonkin warrior raised an eyebrow and placed her hands on her hips. Yes, a look, I continued. A look that told me she trusted us to take care of her kid.
You got all that from a look?
Sella asked again.
How do you know the look wasn't saying, I'm going to burn you alive and take back my son?
Nadir suggested. I could just tell. I threw up my arms. It was a happy look, an understanding look. One that made me feel like we needed to do whatever it took to save both her egg and her. My friends all looked at me like I was crazy, but I knew deep down in my heart I was right. Tyrion's mother wanted me to take care of her kid. And I'd say we'd done a damn fine job so far.
Either way, I'll go.
Tyrion finally agreed.
Just hop up onto my back, and I'll get you down there, close to my family.
I think I should go too.
Ahuara spoke up.
I might not be able to carry either of you, but I can for sure help spread out and anoint the dragons.
The rest of you hang around up here, I warned. And be ready to go. Just in case anything crazy happens.
Crazy like the dragons waking up and eating us all?
Eric gulped. Something like that. I winked at the boy, even though I was dead serious. I was nervous beyond belief about the task ahead, even if I wasn't showing it obviously on my face. We were about to lower ourselves down into a pit full of 8 large deadly beasts that could turn us to ashes with a single huff of their breath. Or devour us in a single bite if they really wanted to. On top of that, we were going to have to get up close to these creatures, rub some nasty-looking oil on their faces, and do so all without waking them up. Hell, anyone with a brain and emotions would be freaked out by the task at hand. Still, I needed to be strong for my people. I needed to be the mighty Draco Rex, the uniter of peoples and races, and the slayer of orcs. So I gave Jonas a nod, and then we both walked over to Tyrion.
Just fly as quietly as you can.
Gemma was pumping up the silver dragon as we approached.
And try your best not to get a sneezing fit like you do sometimes.
Yeah.
Tyrion huffed.
I don't think there are any wild berries down here, Those are what make me sneeze like crazy back home.
Good luck, my friend.
Gemma gave Tyrion a final scratch on the chin, and then she patted his long neck and smiled lovingly at her bondmate. The dragon suddenly let out a long, dull dragon hum as he rubbed his head against Gemma's face, and the Nerolope responded with a happy sigh as she leaned into the display of affection. Then Tyrion pulled away, turned to us, and bent down so we could climb up onto his back. Once Jonas and I were securely on the dragon's back, he beat his wings gently and lifted up into the air. Ahuara joined us in the sky, and then the four of us hovered out over the drop that led deep down into the belly of the volcano. Now that we were above the abyss, we could hear everything going on down below. I could hear the gentle huffs of the dragons as they slept, along with the occasional snort or grunt. And though it was dark in the cavern, there was enough light that we could see the outlines of the sleeping creatures as they twitched and shifted in place. Hot, rancid air rose up from the belly of the volcano. And now I was actually a bit happy Jonas had lit all that incense to cover up its smell.
Here we go!
Tyrion took a deep breath, and then we began our descent. The further we went down, the warmer the air became. Within minutes, the sweat began to drip out of every pore in my body, and I had to use my sleeve to wipe it away before the salty liquid stung my eyes. Then, I saw one of these beasts up close and personal. It came out of the darkness like a phantom, and I forced myself to stifle a gasp when it appeared. The dragon's head shifted to the side as it let out a soft snort and then smacked its lips. Its eyes were still slammed shut, though now I could see its one eyelid was the size of my entire body. The creature had a short snout that moved out into a set of curled lips and two nostrils as wide as a semi-truck's tire. And at the top of its head were two finned ears with a stringy appendage that traveled along the length of its neck before curling downward. The dragon's leathery skin was brilliant, like an emerald, and its body was covered with layer after layer of armored scales. Yep, this was definitely a dragon.
Wow!
Tyrion declared inside of my head.
Does this mean I'll get this big someday too?
That's the idea, I chuckled telepathically. Eat your Wheaties and take your vitamins, and you too can become a towering behemoth like so.
Over to our right was another dragon, though this one was a tad smaller than the green one. Its head was only about half the size of the green dragon, and its skin was a dark black that made it difficult to differentiate from the darkness around us.
Here are the first two, Jonas hissed.
There's another one over here,
Ahuara added.
It's smaller, only about the size of Tyrion.
I'll get Greeny here, I confirmed. Jonas takes the black one, and Ahuara takes the small one.
Jonas then held out the bottle of ointment and motioned for us to give him our hands. He silently popped the cork out of the sea glass vessel, and then poured a small dollop of its contents into mine and Ahuara's hands. The consistency of the ointment was thick and viscous, like olive oil mixed together with toothpaste. It smelled faintly greasy, though the stench wasn't anywhere near as repugnant as the incense or the breath of the sleeping creatures.
Make sure you get it into their nostrils, Jonas explained. Then put a bit of it onto their foreheads, as well as a smear across their upper lip.
Sounds easy enough,
Ahuara admitted as she ran the oil through her fingers. The three of us then split up and made our way toward our own individual targets. My heart hammered inside my chest as I cautiously positioned myself so I was within arm's reach of the emerald green dragon. I didn't dare make a sound. Even though I knew that these creatures were in a deep hibernation, I didn't want to take any chances. Soon, I was just a foot away from the green dragon's face, and I began to feel myself shaking. I calmed myself down with a deep breath, and then I rubbed my hands together to get the ointment spread out evenly across them. Then I had to use every psychological trick in the book to steady my right hand as I reached out to the dragon. I didn't even breathe as I slid my entire fist into the emerald creature's nostril, and I made a slow circle pattern as I spread the ointment out inside. I repeated the action with the left nostril, and then I smeared a bit of the oily substance across its upper lip. Finally, I shimmied over and gently patted the sleeping dragon on its head, right between its eyes.
I let out a sigh of relief as I stepped away from the creature. The task was done.
That wasn't so bad,
Ahuara whispered as she fluttered over to me.
What do we need to do next?
This is where things will get tricky, Jonas admitted. Since they're all sleeping in a large pile, we may not be able to gain access to them until they shift naturally.
Ugh. So you mean we have to sit here and wait? I sighed. That could take forever.
It might, the soothsayer shrugged. But it beats our alternative, which is to try and move them on our own.
That was a very fair point. I wanted to get out of here as quickly as humanly possible, but I wasn't crazy enough to try and shift a dragon while they were asleep. Soon, another one of the dragons let out a soft grunt, and then there was a rumble in the volcano as it rolled over and exposed its head. This one was definitely the plumpest of the group. He was nearly twice as wide as the Emerald Dragon, with chocolate brown skin and a belly made up of leathery yellow flesh. His face was rounded too, with jowls that flapped around against his cheeks as he turned his head.
I'll get this one,
Ahuara offered.
It's going to be harder for you guys to get down there anyways.
The orange-haired butterfly woman was right. Because he was the biggest dragon in the pile, the chunky creature was all the way at the bottom. Currently, there was an opening to his face that was about the size of a buffalo, which was much too small for Tyrion to fly through, but had just enough room for a human-sized butterfly woman to pass undetected. We watched as Ahuara took a bit more ointment into her hands, and then slowly began her descent toward the sleeping brown dragon. Once she was in position, she quickly spread the oily substance across the creature's nostrils, upper lip, and forehead. But she looked completely flabbergasted when she came back up to Tyrion, with wide eyes and a disgusted frown on her face.
Everything okay? I whispered to the pixie.
That one's breath smells like a rotten hopper corpse.
Ahuara shuddered. Soon, the Emerald Dragon let out a long sigh, and the force of his breath blew my hair around like I was standing in a wind tunnel. Then the jolly green giant grumbled and rolled his head over to the side. Underneath him were a pair of dragons about the size of Malky. They were both a crimson-red color, with intricate patterns of purple lines and starbursts all over their scaly skin. The only glaring differences between the two red dragons was the fact that one of them had a gnarly-looking scar across its right eye. When I looked a bit closer, however, I noticed the one on the right had a few spines on its tail, much like an ankylosaurus. Twins, I smiled. These two are twins.
How cute,
Tyrion grumbled.
Let me see if I can get closer.
The silver dragon fluttered down to the space before the two red beasts, and then Jonas and I stepped forward. We repeated the action on the creatures as we coated their nostrils and then the spots on their heads with the ointment. When we were finished, Tyrion floated back up to our original spot, and we waited for the next creature to stir.
I counted six, Jonas announced in a hushed voice. There should only be two left.
Sure enough, another dragon head popped out from underneath the black dragon to our right. But this time, I recognized it immediately. How could I not? It was the very first full-grown fire dragon I'd ever set eyes on. The scaly golden skin that glistened in the sun, the massive talons, the elongated snout filled with razor-sharp teeth. It was Tyrion's mom. Right next to her was a similarly sized dragon that looked like it had seen better days. The poor thing's skin was wrinkled beyond belief and looked like an old leather handbag. A few of its golden scales had flaked off its body, too, which exposed the bright red soft flesh these dragons had beneath their armor.
He's an elderly dragon,
Ahuara noted.
He must be at least 300 years old or more.
Tyrion,
I asked the dragon in my head. Do you recognize that lady dragon down there?
How could I not?
The silver dragon sniffled.
Mom!
Tyrion floated us in closer, and then I got to work on his mother. Thankfully, the large golden beast was much more timid this time around, and I made short work of my task. That was, until I placed my hand against her forehead. The second I touched her, the dragon's eyelids shot open, and I was faced with two large purple eyes. A chill shot through my entire being as I froze in place. I didn't dare breathe. I didn't dare flinch. And I sure as hell didn't dare to make any sounds. My stomach felt like it was tying itself into knots as the beast's purple eyes stared straight into me. And for a second, I worried this was the end. Then, as soon as the fear began to wash over my body, the dragon's eyes closed, and it let out a long sigh. Holy fuck. That was a close one. Please tell me you saw that, I asked Tyrion telepathically.
I did,
he admitted.
I was the one who told her to calm down, and that everything was all right.
You did?
I did,
Tyrion reaffirmed.
I think that maybe because she's my mother, we have a bond just like you and I and Gemma all do. But you couldn't hear me talking to her, could you?
I couldn't.
I shook my head. Probably because she's not bonded to any of my friends.
Are we all good then? Or do I need to worry about becoming dragon food?
She was delirious,
Tyrion sighed.
She didn't know where she was or what was going on, so I just told her her son was here, and that everything was going to be okay. That's when she went back to sleep.
Thanks, Tyrion,
I sighed.
You're quite literally a lifesaver.
Jonas finished up with the elderly dragon, and then we all met back at the center of Tyrion's body.
That's it, the soothsayer confirmed. Our work here is done, and we can return to the upper level of the volcano.
Thank goodness, I huffed quietly. I think I'm about to die of heatstroke down here.
Tyrion moved us back up to the platform of the volcano, where our friends were all waiting for us with bated breath.
Well?
Gemma asked the second she saw us.
How did it go? Is the ceremony going to work?
It's one step closer to working, Jonas confirmed. But there are still a few more actions that need to be done. First and foremost, I need the Morpho women to step forward.
Awara joined her sisters in the group of neon-haired women. Then we all watched as Elzara walked up to Jonas with a confused expression.
I want to go first, but I don't know what to do,
the blue-haired beauty told the soothsayer. Without saying a word, Jonas produced a second bottle of ointment from his robe and then popped out the cork. The elderly dragonkin poured a few drops onto his hand, reached up, and rubbed a trail of the substance on Elzara's forehead like she was Simba. Once that was done, Jonas sat the bottle down on the ground and produced a small bowl, and we watched curiously as he poured a small amount of ointment into the bowl and swirled it around for good measure.
This is the part that might make you feel uncomfortable, he sighed. I need you to prick your finger and then put a few drops of blood into the bowl. Everybody who intends to be bonded with a dragon needs to do this.
Oh, that's it?
Elzara asked as her body relaxed.
I thought you were going to ask us to do something much worse.
The blue-haired beauty didn't waste a second. She pulled out her fan blade, held the tip of the middle spike against her index finger, and then pushed. She let out a slight gasp as the weapon poked through her flesh, but then she sheathed it once more. Finally, Elzara held her injured finger out over the bowl, squeezed it gently, and watched as a few drops of blood dripped down into the ointment below. When she was done, Ahura volunteered to go next. Then came Dalwin, then Kandara, then Halara, and finally Zarandri. Once all the Morphos had gone, Jonas looked between the rest of the crew curiously.
There are two dragons left, but I count three of you without a dragon bond, the soothsayer frowned. Who wishes to have the last two spots?
Sela shook her head.
Let Lezon and Nadir have them.
Are you sure?
Nadir gasped.
You've been around way longer than us, and it just doesn't feel right for me to bond with a fire dragon,
Sela admitted.
Perhaps I should wait for another water dragon to come along, and then I can try to create this connection. Besides, you two would be awfully deadly with a fire-breathing dragon at your sides.
Nadir giggled as her tail wagged like a dog's.
Thank you, Sela.
The mossy-scaled dragonkin warrior just gave her friends a smile and a nod, and then she stepped aside so they could approach Jonas. Lezon and Nadir both repeated the same process as the Morpho women,
But when they got to the point where they needed to prick their fingers, the two raccoon women went with a more unconventional method. Instead of using her dagger or pricking her finger with the edge of her stone axe or something like that, Lazan simply raised her index finger up to her mouth and then bit down with her razor-sharp teeth. A small spray of blood gushed out from behind her lips, and everyone in the volcano let out an audible gasp. "Holy shit, Lazan!" I declared.
What?
The multicolor-haired woman chuckled as she held her finger out over the bowl and allowed quite a bit to dribble off into it.
I needed to bleed, so I made myself bleed.
When Nadir stepped up, she repeated the same process as her kunag friend. Oh, seriously? I groaned. Just use your dagger. Nadir shot me a perky smile as she pushed her blood out into the bowl. Then she shrugged, gave me a wink, and stepped away. Meanwhile, Jonas squatted down and came back up with the bowl in his hands. His brow was furrowed as he inspected the liquid inside of the container, and his frown deepened as he held the bowl tightly in one hand and ran his fingers nervously through his peppered hair with the other. For the first time during this whole process, I noticed something on Jonas's face, something I'd never seen him express before. Fear. Jonas was afraid, and that made me feel very nervous.
Okay. The soothsayer took a deep breath. This is it, my friends. Once I pour this mixture into the volcano and begin my incantation, there is no going back. There will be no stopping the rebonding ceremony, and whatever is set into motion will be put into motion.
Then do it, I nodded. We didn't come this far to give up now.
I will need at least 30 more minutes to make this work, the soothsayer announced. Please, 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 for all things holy, don't interrupt me while I'm saying this incantation. Doing so could be dire.
I understand, I promised. Everybody leave Jonas alone for the next 30 minutes. Jonas gave me a cautious nod and slowly sauntered over to the side of the ledge. Then he looked down into the abyss, froze in place for a second or two, and dumped the contents over the side. As the oily crimson liquid spilled down onto the sleeping dragons, Jonas bowed his head and began to speak in his native tongue. Even though I'd been the Draco Rex for quite some time now, I still wasn't fully versed in the traditional dragonkin language. I had no idea what Jonas was saying at the moment, but I didn't really care as long as he kept doing it uninterrupted. The 8 women anointed by the ointment remained standing at Jonas's side, while the rest of us pushed back against the far wall of the volcano. We watched intensely as Jonas continued the ceremony, and we didn't dare to say a single word. After about 10 minutes into the incantation, Lazan let out a gasp.
Guys?
The multicolor-haired kunag muttered.
I can hear something in my head, like a voice.
I can too,
Elzara noted.
Strange.
Ahuara grumbled.
I hear nothing.
Really?
Nadir announced.
Because I hear the voice too. It's soft, like a hum,
Dalwin added.
We're still pretty early on in the process, I whispered to the women. Maybe some of you are just taking to the ceremony quicker than the rest.
We went silent once again as the incantation continued. But after a few more minutes, I heard Malky's panicked voice rise up in my head.
Ben!
The water dragon gulped.
We have a problem. A major, major problem.
Oh, shit. Now was the absolute worst time to have any sort of problem.
What is it?
I demanded telepathically.
I'm not sure,
Malky admitted.
There are creatures running up the side of the mountain. They're about as big as you are, but covered with fur. And they're running on all fours.
My blood went cold in my body. Wargs. These fucking orcs had just sicked wargs on us.